Archie and Jughead were in their accustomed place, Kelly noticed, talking to a motorist. It was 10:12 the next night. Kelly watched them closely, as well as Big Bob and his lieutenant. Charlie Brown was also in business tonight, as was Dagwood. Arch and Jug seemed busier than the others, he noted, drawing the larger, cleaner cars from the suburbs. Kelly leaned back in his window perch, still alert. He roused himself a little after 2 and checked the room. He'd left nothing. Okay. Kelly made his way down the stairs and out the back door, resuming his shambling gait. He followed Archie and Jughead to a dark, narrow passage between 2 buildings. He moved in, walking very lightly and reaching for his silenced pistol. They looked different close up, human almost, yet even 10 feet away they couldn't see him. It didn't get much better. "Don't move," he whispered. Archie's head turned, then he saw the pistol. "Hey!" Jughead turned and saw the gun aimed at his employer's head. He froze. Kelly's hand waved him in, and he approached. "What do you want?" Archie asked quietly.
"You a cop?"
Jughead asked, rather stupidly, the other 2 thought. "No, I'm not here to arrest anybody," he motioned with his hand. "Face down, quick." Then he searched them for weapons. Archie's rusty .32 revolver went into a pocket. Kelly tied their hands with some electrical cord he'd brought. Then he rolled them over. "I need your help," Kelly said.
"What with?"
Archie asked. "Looking for a guy, name of Billy, drives a red Roadrunner."
"Get your fucking ass out of here," Archie suggested.
Kelly fired 2 rounds into Jug's head. Blood flew, showering across Archie's face. The pusher's eyes flew open in horror.
"Sweet Jesus, man," the voice rasped.
"Billy, red Roadrunner, loves to show it off. He's a distributor. I want to know where he hangs out," Kelly said quietly.
"If I tell you that,
you'll get a new supplier. Me," Kelly said. "Billy and his friends have been screwing around with the wrong people, and it's my job to straighten things out."
"Look, man, I can't—"
"I can always ask somebody else," Kelly paused significantly. Archie talked freely until the time came for him to rejoin Jughead. Archie's pockets contained a nice wad of cash and a collection of small drug envelopes, which found their way into his jacket pockets. Kelly carefully stepped away, making sure he hadn't stepped in any blood. He renewed his drunken gait, taking a roundabout path back to his car. Thank God, he thought, driving north again, he'd be able to shower and shave tonight. But what the hell would he do with the drugs? Detectives Emmett Ryan and Tom Douglas stood back, letting the forensic people do their jobs.
"Time of death?" Ryan asked the representative from the coroner's office.
"After midnight, certainly, probably after 2.
The cause of death was clear. The holes in both men's foreheads answered that.
"Monroe," Ryan called. The young officer who had spotted the bodies came over. "What do you know about these 2?
"Both pushers. That one is Juju. The other I don't know, but he worked with him."
"Thanks," Ryan said. "See any shell casings, Tom?"
"Nope,"
Douglas replied, scanning the area. They took their time examining the passageway.
"Nothing at all, Em," Douglas said.
4 shots, early in the morning. You figure somebody might have heard," Ryan said.
"Not bad shooting, Em,"
Douglas said, pointing to the hole scarcely 1/2 inch apart.
"Our shooter has a real steady hand."
"A drug ripoff," Ryan said, diagnosing the incident. It wasn't terribly professional, but it was pretty obvious.
"Somebody got Juju."
It was Detective Mark Charon, narcotics squad, who had just arrived.
"I had a case running on that fuck, too."
"Mark, any word on an experienced robber working the street?" Ryan asked.
"The duo," Charon said. "But they use a shotgun."
"This is almost like a mob hit," Douglas mused.
No, mob hits were almost never this elegant. These 2 had been taken out by someone who knew his business.
What can I do for you? Rosen asked from behind his desk.
Gloves, Kelly said. The kind you use, thin, rubber. Do they cost much?
Rosen almost asked what the gloves were for, but decided he didn't need to know.
Hell, they come in boxes of 100 pair.
I don't need that many. The surgeon opened a drawer and tossed over 10 of the plastic bags.
You look awfully respectable.
And so Kelly did, dressed in his blue CIA suit.
Don't knock it, Doc, Kelly smiled.
Can you do me a favor?
Sure, Doc.
Sandy's car broke down. I was going to run her home, but I've got a meeting that'll run till 4.
It's okay with her. It's okay with me.
It was only a 20-minute wait, which Kelly disposed of by going to the cafeteria. Sandy O'Toole found him there, just after the change of shift. Kelly stood. My lady's carriage awaits. She smiled and followed him out to the parking lot.
I've never seen you so dressed up, she said.
I can still roll in the mud with the best of them, he said, but the joke failed.
Relax, ma'am. You've had a long day at the office.
Nurse O'Toole stopped and turned.
It's not your fault. Bad week. We had a child, auto accident. She faded out on my shift. Sometimes I hate this work.
You fight your dragons.
I fight mine, Kelly said. And how many dragons have you slain?
One or two, Kelly said, trying to control his words. Sandy was too easy to talk with.
But how do you keep from turning into one of them?
Kelly didn't need to hear this, didn't want to have to examine his own conscience.
I've never had that problem, he said, evading the issue. They drove in silence, Kelly's thoughts in turmoil.
Your house needs some paint, Kelly told her as they pulled up, glad that it did.
I know. I can't afford painters. I don't have the time to do it myself, she said wearily.
Sandy, a suggestion.
What's that?
Let yourself live.
I'm sorry Tim's gone, but he is gone. You have to go on.
The fatigue in her face was painful to see, but she looked carefully at Kelly.
Something's changed in you. I wonder why, she thought. Something had resolved itself. I don't know why I like talking to you, she said as they got out of the car.
You do?
I think so, Sandy replied with an almost smile. John, it's too soon for me.
Sandy, it's too soon for me, too. Is it too soon to be friends?
No,
she smiled. Dinner sometime. I asked once, remember? She hesitated, then decided.
Next week, maybe.
I'll give you a call. Get some rest, Kelly said. He didn't attempt to kiss her or even take her hand, just a friendly smile before he walked away.
Sandy watched him drive off, still wondering what there was about the man that was different.
Kelly cursed himself, then knew that he had to control his thinking, stick to the easy stuff. Just remember that he was hunting people, just as he had before. He wasn't going to change the world. Just clean up one little corner.
What's the story on Juju? Tucker asked.
Looks like a ripoff. He got careless. One of yours, eh?
Lieutenant Charon said.
Yeah, he moved a lot for us. Who did it?
They were in the city library, hidden in some back rows.
No telling, Henry. Ryan and Douglas were there, and it didn't look to me like they had much. Somebody wanted a little cash, maybe some drugs. Maybe break into the business, quick. Look for a new pusher selling your stuff.
Tucker nodded thoughtfully.
I need something, Charon said next.
What?
A dealer.
Too many of them are mine now, remember?
It had been all right to use Charon to eliminate the major competition, but as Tucker's control had grown, there were fewer and fewer independent operators.
If you want me to protect you, Henry, then I have to be able to control investigations. For me to control the investigations, I have to land some big fish from time to time.
When?
Beginning of the week. Something tasty.
I'll get back to you.
Tucker replaced his book and walked away. Charon spent a few more minutes searching for the right book. He found it along with the envelope that sat next to it. The police lieutenant didn't bother counting. He knew that the amount would be right.
Greer handled the introductions. Mr. Clark, this is General Martin Young, and this is Robert Ritter. Kelly shook hands with both. The Marine was an aviator, but he hadn't a clue who Ritter was.
Nice analysis you did on Kingpin, Ritter said. You hit all the high points.
Sir, it's not really all that hard to figure out. He moved to the diagram on the conference table. Here's the barracks, only two doors. I bet there's not 40 guys in there.
Come in here.
General Young tapped the southwest corner of the compound.
Yes, sir. The trick's getting the initial strike team in close. Two gunships hose these two buildings. Land the evac choppers here. It's all over in under 5 minutes from when the shooting starts. That's the land phase. I'll leave the rest to the flyers.
Mr. Clark, you're an optimist, Greer observed, reminding Kelly of his cover name at the same time.
It's all stuff I've done before, Admiral.
Ritter sat back, looking at the photos and diagrams. He was putting his career on the line, as was everyone else. But the alternative was doing nothing, and doing that would someday destroy his agency. Keeping faith was more than the right thing. It was also good business.
Better get things going, he said.
Bob, does that mean you're on our side? Greer asked.
Yes, it does, he answered with finality. We need an additional safety factor,
Young said, figuring how the helicopters would get in.
Yes, sir, Kelly said. Somebody has to go in early and eyeball things.
Hell, he thought. Why not one more crusade?
I guess that's me.